The show's starting out in sort of a disco way, isn't it?
It has been lately.
It has been.
Kevin, are you turning
Kevin's
into a disco
finding
mama?
Disco to be his music of choice.
I just think it's the song of my generation. You
this
know,
song
the
is?
Sound. Well, the sound of my generation. Yeah. Disco.
I don't think it is at all.
I'm bringing it back.
Single-handedly.
Nice polyester pants.
Thanks.
It is kind of dated, like when you see anything disco-related, when you see those floors that had the lights in them. Like in Staying Alive,
right?
Saturday Night Fever.
We still have those at home.
Do you have those at the house, Steve?
Just a couple of rooms.
The disco balls.
The disco balls.
Oh,
yeah,
not so much.
There was a time where it was very easy to rent one. Like there were a lot of shops,
and you know why you tried?
No, I just remember going into shops, and there'd be a sign that say, "We rent disco balls." And then there'd be an assortment of a couple of them up near the front.
Where did you frequent? Was it American Sale?
Yeah, at American Sale. We were trying to decide between getting an in-the-ground pool or a disco ball, and we opted for the disco ball.
Good choice.
I don't know why. What would have to happen where you would need to rent
a
disco ball? I guess so.
A dance party. Yeah. Bill Left's dance party.
Right.
How many of those did you have?
A very popular syndicated show when I was in high school. I was a high school student, but I also had my own syndicated disco show. And Denny Terrio never, to this day, he will not let me live that down, Wendy. Anytime I see him at a party, he always brings it up. Very crazy. All right, welcome to the show. I'm Bill, that's Wendy. If you want to join in, we'd love to hear from you, and you can it by dialing us up at 312-981-7200.
I would like to talk to people today.
Yeah, today would be a good day to talk to people.
You know why? Because we're on the cusp of officially summer.
It happens tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow, what's the exact time? Is it this evening at a particular time? I keep hearing everybody say it.
I'm at odds with this because in my head, and I know this is wrong, but summer is all of June, all of July, and all of August.
Well,
June
that's changing.
To the end of August. It is without a doubt.
Although this year we seem to be on track. Last year it seemed like summer didn't officially start till like mid-June when
right.
it actually got warm.
Right.
And
that's
then it
true.
Goes to October now.
Yeah. But not consistently.
Right.
It like fades in and out through September and October.
It was chilly last night.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we ate outside in a restaurant and we parked ourselves under one of those heating lamps because we wanted to
Seriously?
Eat outside. Yeah.
It was that cold?
Yeah, it was really cold by us. Yeah.
Cold. That's such a relative
term. I mean, I'll
take
it. It was, you know, it was 60. That's not bad.
It looks like the summer solstice starts tonight, I believe, at 11:24 p.m.
All right, well, happy almost summer.
That's the ushering in of summer.
You know, don't you think of summer as when school's out?
Yes.
That's when summer officially starts.
Yes. But now I have, my sister-in-law is a teacher, and her last day of school is today.
See, but those kids who go so late don't start till after Labor
right.
Day.
Yeah, right.
Which should happen anyway. When we went to school, you didn't start till after Labor Day. What's this, go for 2-3 days, and then you're off for Labor Day weekend?
Our first day of school was always the day after the Labor Day. Well, it's Labor Day. The Labor Day telethon, the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon. That was the ushering in of the end of summer into the new school
year. Did you start to hate Jerry Lewis because that meant that it's back to school?
I hold no ill will toward Jerry Lewis, but when I see him to this day, if Jerry Lewis is on TV, I say to myself, I need to go buy some folders.
Loose leaf paper and
yes.
Ticonderoga pencils.
Yes. I need a cigar box to keep my stuff in my desk, you know, to keep my compass in.
That was so fun for me, always going out to get school supplies. I don't know why.
It was.
Just amazingly exciting.
Because everything's just new.
The smell of it.
I am so with you with the smell of it.
And the crayons, like to this day... Like just the opening, that first time you open the box, because it always reminds me, it's like bleacher seats in a baseball stadium.
Boy, you're a weird kid.
But it's not
yes,
just bleacher
it
seats, but it shows that people of all colors can get along.
Diversity.
Diversity. It represents diversity. And then you have the rich section, and that's your gold, your silver, and your copper.
The metallics, yep.
Yeah, that's your rich section.
And we've decided that why in God's name was there a white crayon?
No one needs
it. Unless you had black construction paper, really,
no
there was
it.
No need for it.
I'll do you one better. Every year we would have to buy a compass, and they weren't expensive. They were like $1.87, but I don't think I ever used a compass. And right now, if you needed me to use a compass, I would be, I know how to clip the pencil part of it in, but I don't know what I would do with it except for, of course, you know, draw part of a circle.
If you ever had to use a compass, it was a bad day.
It would be,
I liked it because I was a big fan of Etch-a-Sketch, or not Etch-a-Sketch, Spirograph.
Spirograph. But didn't you know, like, I think kids know, I knew early on, I would never be in a profession where I would need a compass.
I wanted to be an architect for a while.
I never could do the whole circle without screwing it up.
Right. And plus, you always had a little needle mark in your paper, and that always disturbed me.
Don't press so hard.
It's not in my nature, Wendy. I got to press pretty hard.
Keep pressing on, baby.
Yep.
Well, now they have the school kits that you just pay $55, and it's all
$55.
Pardon?
Yeah, it's expensive.
$555.
It's very expensive now.
Well, not for elementary school.
It can get into the hundreds.
No.
I think you don't think so?
Well, if you buy it on your own, that's why they package them together through the school, and it's like $56. And I would do it just because it was easier.
Right.
But the last few years, Dylan wanted to go handpick his stuff, and that's when you spend the $180.
Now, I've mentioned this on the show before, and this is something I used to do. I haven't done it in a couple of years, but for me, because summer was the most magical time of year, the last thing I ever wanted to think about was going back to school. But you'll see in a week or in 2 weeks, some store, when I was a kid, it was always Venture, would have their back to school sale like that last week in June, like right before 4th of July, there'd be some back to school sale at Venture. All right. So I've done this about 3 or 4 times in my life where if I'm in a store and it's June and I see a back to school display, I take it down.
You're going to get arrested.
I just dismantle it.
Can I tell you, at Hobby Lobby, they already have Christmas stuff up? I am
now?
Not kidding you.
That's too early.
They did clearance on summer stuff, which, hello, summer just started.
Summer just started. They're already getting rid of it?
Yes, and they have a bunch of harvest things for Thanksgiving, and then there's a Christmas aisle already with ornaments.
I love Christmas, but this isn't a time to be thinking about Christmas, unless you're a tree time, in which case it's 24 hours a day, 12 months a year.
Yeah, that's a good
point. I'm fine
point.
With that.
Can we talk to Robert?
Yeah.
Hi, Robert. How are you? Welcome back to summer. Not to school.
Guys, I love your show.
Thank
and
you, Robert.
I love WGN.
That's very nice of you. We love you.
You're the best.
Thank you.
Bar none.
Thank you.
Look, my mom taught for 30 years, okay, at Nathan Hale School. I hope they don't get mad at her. But she, my mom, you know, school teachers have to buy everything for themselves.
Sure.
They have to buy. Yeah. So I would go to the casino. I'd get 6 decks of cards, and my mom taught third graders how to do math by playing blackjack.
Get out of here with the coolest teacher ever.
I swear to God, and the principal got mad at my mom because the kids started betting for, you know, buttons and stuff like that in the back of the classroom playing, and 5 of her students right now graduated from MIT.
Really?
That's awesome.
That's outstanding. That's excellent.
Yeah, now, if anyone wants to read a really good book, it's called Bringing Down the House, and it's about the MIT students
who have
hundreds of millions of dollars counting cards. But the point is that you learn math. You learn what has come with it.
And you learn to do math on the fly, because that is my weakness.
Oh,
like
my God,
when the pizza guy
that
comes, I can't add a tip on
it.
I have to know the total before they arrive so I can think it through.
Right.
So this is a good way to teach kids.
And you learn how to double down and how to split aces and how to not buy insurance.
And you know what's weird is that nowadays they don't even teach cursive.
No, I know.
Some schools do.
Right.
My kids learned how to do cursive. I think they're still teaching it in our school district.
Yeah, many places still do. But you're right, Robert. There are plenty of places that have done away with it. And that's upsetting, isn't it?
It is. And by the way, guys, God bless you. And may everybody in your listening audience have a wonderful, wonderful year.
Thank you, Robert.
You're awesome.
Thank you, Robert.
Take care.
Love you right back.
What was that meeting like when the principal finds out that one of the teachers is teaching third graders how to play blackjack? I would imagine that's mixed emotions, because it does teach you a skill. It does teach you how to count very quickly, but by the same token, it could lead to a life of gambling.
Yeah, but it depends on the deck of cards. If there's like little cat faces instead of a jack.
At somebody for that.
Yeah, you're just showing the tree, two
right.
trees.
Right.
It should be 3 trees. Tree trees.
Yeah. Right.
But little dogs, little cats, fish,
right.
That hurts no one.
Right, right.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been in on that meeting.
No, that could have been ugly. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, Pat is on the line. We were talking about at 11:26, I believe, tonight is when summer officially kicks off. 11:24, thank you, Kevin. Off by 2 minutes.
Kevin's very exact.
Could have ruined things for everyone. And the back-to-school things, how exciting it was. And I noticed at Hobby Lobby they have Christmas stuff. Pat, you want to jump in on this?
Yes, I do. I'm a crafty type person.
Yeah.
Me too. Are you a crafty beaver?
I like to knit and crochet and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to plan ahead because I've got one Afghan pattern that I like to do on occasion.
Yeah.
It takes me 9 months.
It takes 9 months to do that? Wow.
It takes me 9 months to complete that because I not only do that, I like to sew, I like to cook, but I work 40 hours a week at a library.
Right.
And speaking of which, I'm already planning my programs for teens for fall and winter.
Wow, you plan way ahead.
Well, we have a newsletter that goes out. And so by mid-July, I've got to have my fall programs already planned and set in the calendar so they can go in the newsletter that goes out to the homes.
Pat, can I hire you to plan a graduation party? Because both my sons just graduated, and I have to have one this summer, and I haven't even put it together yet.
No, I'm sorry.
No, Wendy, you're asking too much.
I have enough on my plate right now. I have enough on my plate right now.
Well, Pat, now it makes sense, because you see that Christmas stuff in the beginning of summer, and you say to yourself, this is way too early, but now it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
And Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you, Pat.
When I was at the light, this was the week we used to start playing the Christmas music.
Earlier.
Yeah, right before 4th of July, we'd start playing some Johnny Mathis.
That, you know what? As soon as summer ends, I'm okay to start hearing it. I
really
am.
Are you?
You can bring it in, you know, August.
Now,
September.
I want to explain.
I was in a shopping store yesterday.
Yeah.
A mom and daughter, and I heard the mom say, well, for back to school, do you think?
Oh, isn't that upsetting? That's so upsetting. That's why, like, I'm serious. When I would go through a store, if I would see that display in June, I would just, you know, just casually dismantle it because I'd think to myself, if I'm a kid and I see this, this takes me out of summer. Like, as soon as I see that, I go, wait, we just started summer vacation. I got to think about school already. I just take it down.
Why don't you just walk past it?
Because I do this for the kids, Wendy.
Oh, my God.
I don't want the kids to suffer.
Are you a dweller?
So I fall on the grenade, on the summer grenade. It's inconceivable to me that a store would say, let's take advantage of these kids. Let's show them that school is I don't want to see that in the summer.
I think they're taking advantage of the parents saying, shop now
before the
coolest binder is already snatched up.
Right.
I want the pretty kitties on it.
Right.
And butterflies.
Yeah. Yeah,
as if anything called a binder could actually be cool.
Oh, they made the what was it the snapper? It was like
what is that?
It was better than the binders we used to have. Kevin would probably know the catch all. There was
the snapper binder.
The snapper binder.
You know what I'm talking about?
Trapper keeper.
Yes.
Trapper keeper.
Snapper. I was close.
Snapper binder.
Snapper trapper.
That's a character on MASH, Kevin.
Trapper keeper?
Yeah.
It was kind of cool.
They were super cool.
What did it do? I don't think we've ever had those.
It was a binder meets a folder meets
it
a clipboard.
It was cloth.
Yeah.
How heavy was it?
Not too heavy. Although, I'm telling you right now, I don't know how these kids stand upright. If you've lifted up a backpack on a kid in third through eighth grade, and in high school, of course, but these elementary school kids.
I don't know how Reese didn't tip over.
I know.
Sometimes she'd leave her backpack like in the backseat of the car, and I would lift it to bring it in the house.
And you could barely lift
it. Hernia.
And they wore it every day.
I know. I can't figure it out.
Not only that, it was always the one strap. I wouldn't ever, you know.
So right. I know.
Yeah, there's no way to distribute the weight properly.
Well, if you wear it the way you're supposed to, but it's not cool.
No.
Like a messenger bag was so much cooler, so that's what I bought Michael for high school.
Yeah.
I couldn't lift that thing at all.
Did you have any kids in your school that carried a briefcase?
Yes.
Did you make fun of them?
Yes.
Yep. You had teachers.
Yeah, but look at who was smarter than us.
The teachers in our school used to make fun of those kids. There was one kid, he didn't even call it a briefcase. He would refer to it as an attaché case. We laugh at him for that. Could you pass me my attaché case? Really? Seriously?
That kid is a CEO somewhere making a zillion
dollars. He's doing
real
well for himself. But like the first time I heard it, I just, it didn't fit because it was a fifth grader saying the word attaché case. And I would go, wow, how did you, how did you decide to call it that? And I know now that that's what it's called.
He's but a young Bond.
Yeah. Yep.
The people you made fun of are coming back to laugh at you right now. You know that.
I know.
Real quickly before we take a break for news, Craig is on the line. And why does your birthday depress you, Craig?
Because it was always the first day of school for me.
Oh, no. That shouldn't be that way.
I'm still seeing my psychiatrist about it.
It's upsetting forever, isn't it?
So what's your birthday?
August 27th.
Yep, that's yeah. right about the time.
Well,
the
happy
hottest period of last height wave of the summer. And you're trying to concentrate, and all you want to do is cool off, and you're dying of the heat.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Schools weren't air conditioning then, so you had to suffer. I don't know why they started school so early.
Wendy,
this is the 70s. I'm 55 years old.
Wendy and I are saving up. We're going to get you an attaché case for your birthday.
Okay.
All right. That'll make it better.
Thank you, Craig.
Thanks,
Happy
Craig.
Birthday early.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye.
You're so weird.
Can't help it. All right. We'll take a quick break. We have news and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy with you on WGN.
Ooh. Ah.
Can I share a moment with you that is both really funny and really sad at the exact same time? And you already know because you lived it, but I don't think you were as affected by it as I am. Kevin, our producer, is younger than us.
He is.
By a lot.
His parents are younger than us.
Mom and dad are younger than us. His grandparents are younger than us. I don't understand how that's possible, but it is. All right. So in the morning show, during the morning show, somebody brought the morning show pies. I don't know who. I didn't get to hear that part of the show, but somebody brought in some pies. So I have in front of me a banana cream, a part of a banana cream pie. So Kevin came in and said, why is this pie here? And I said, in case Soupy Sale stops by, he and I are going to have a pie fight. And Kevin was very polite and laughed at that. And then as he was leaving, I heard him say, and I think you did too,
yeah,
I don't know who Soupy Sales is. And then he leaves.
Which usually... Kevin doesn't know your references.
Yeah, this happens at least once.
I know.
Once.
I would say about 20 times a day.
But usually he just laughs and doesn't say,
right,
I don't know who that is.
Right.
Usually I hear him laugh uncomfortably and I go, do you know who that is? And he goes, no.
I know. I've heard that.
I will say between producing Dave Plyer, Dean Richards, Soupy Sales is a name that I've heard so many times here.
But but never enough to where you'd say, I should look that up.
Of course not.
And find out why
this
man
really funny.
Is synonymous with a pie fight. Right. He was the best of all the pie fighters, I would say.
And that can't be his real name.
Soupy Sales?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Soupy?
He liked soup.
He was a big fan of soup and pies.
Then,
but it was so nice the way you placated me as if to say, I'm sure in your world this is funny, so I'll play by those rules, but
yeah,
as soon as I leave,
I'm
not
going to
laugh.
It's the smile and nod routine.
Right. I know. I don't know what his given name
Milton
was.
Milton Supman. Or Soupman, I guess.
Yeah, Soupman.
That's where the soupy comes from.
Yeah.
I would have stuck with Milton Soupman. It's like Superman.
That sounds like a creepy guy, though, doesn't it? Milton Soupman sounds creepy to me.
What if there's someone listening by the name of Milton Soupman?
In which case, it's a great name. It's a great name. All right, so that leads us to this, which we find out yesterday, and boy, is this sad, and that is that comedian Bill Dana has died.
I know the name, and I know a character that made him famous, but
yeah,
other than that, I don't know that I was really that aware of him.
All right, so best known, Bill Dana would best be known for his work on The Steve Allen Show. He was one of a stable of comedians who played various characters on The Steve Allen Show. But he also wrote one of the most important television episodes in the history of sitcoms.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He started out as a writer, and Steve Allen took a liking to him, so he put him in the stable of guys who were performers on the show, and that included Louis Nye, and that included...
I loved Louis Nye.
Pat Harrington.
Loved him. Schneider.
Don Knotts.
Loved
they were
him.
All regulars on the show. And so he started out as a writer, and then after the Steve Allen Show, he used to be on a bunch of other variety shows, and he had his own show for a couple of years, The Bill Dana Show. He went back to writing and then wrote an episode of All in the Family, and it's the episode with Sammy Davis Jr. I think it's called Sammy's Visit or something.
I was just going to guess All My Children.
No, All in the
I
Family.
I mean, I was going to guess All in the Family.
You would have been wrong.
No, I was going to guess All in the Family because you
yeah.
said one of the best episodes ever in television history. That show pushed the envelope a lot.
It's the episode where Sammy Davis Jr. rides in. Archie, for a while, in addition to his regular job, needs extra money, so he becomes a cab driver, and that lasts for about a season or two. And in his cab one day, he picks up Sammy Davis Jr., and for those of you who know the show, Archie wasn't that friendly to other races. So all of a sudden, Sammy Davis Jr. is in his cab, and he admires Sammy Davis Jr., and Sammy leaves an attaché case in his cab and has to come to the bunker house to pick it up. And it's just it's a perfect episode. It's got one of the biggest laughs in history in the episode because Archie's nervous that somebody in the family is going to say something about Sammy Davis Jr.'s eye, and nobody does. And then Archie does.
Because he only has one eye.
So Archie says, "Would you like cream or sugar in your eye?" And the crowd goes nuts.
But he was trying so hard to behave and to welcome Sammy into his home.
And then at the end, it's another one of the biggest laughs ever is that Archie's uncomfortable around him and Sammy Davis Jr. plants a huge kiss on him. And it's just really funny. And Bill Dana wrote that episode, which is, like I said, it's one of the biggest episodes ever. Now, here's the question I have about Bill Dana. He had this character named Jose Jimenez. So I've always wondered if that character, if somebody tried that today, if it would work. And I don't think it would. I think because it was the late 50s, and it was just funny that he was a Hispanic guy, and that was kind of it. There wasn't much more to it than him mangling the English language. There was nothing else there.
Wasn't his tagline just saying his name?
That was it.
Every
time he'd come out, he'd be dressed as either an astronaut or a baseball player or you name the profession. And then they'd ask him what his name was and he would say it and the crowd would go nuts. And that was kind of it. There wasn't much to it. I'll play you a clip and you can see what I mean. And I love him. I thought Bill Dana was hysterical, but I don't know that this would play today. So here's Bill Dana.
My name, Jose Jimenez. I to Santa Claus. I teach to Santa Claus. So, I to Santa Claus. I teach Santa Claus to speak.
So people would cry.
Hilarity
laughing.
Ensued.
But I don't know how that works. Like, if you explain to somebody today why that's funny, it doesn't really work. But in the 1950s, that was really funny for some weird reason. He was also part of one of television's best inside jokes of all time. Can I share that with you?
Yeah, I love these.
And it's such a weird coincidence because we talked about part one of this when Stephen First died yesterday. Stephen First was on St. Elsewhere, and St. Elsewhere had a series of great inside jokes that you really, really had to pay attention to because in almost every episode there was something going on. Sometimes they would name the doctors after other famous doctors. Like on St. Elsewhere, there was a Dr. Stephen Kiley, which was a steal of James Brolin's character from Marcus Welby.
I didn't pick up on any of that when I watched that.
There was so much great inside stuff going on St. Elsewhere. And one of the best inside jokes that they never talked about, it just happened, was anytime any of the main characters on St. Elsewhere's parents came to Boston to visit them, they were always played by the cast of the Steve Allen Show because the people who put the show together were huge fans of Steve Allen's show. So when Ed Begley Jr.'s mom and dad came, it was Steve Allen and Jane Meadows. When Stephen First's father was on the show, he was played by Louis Nye. Bill Dana played Howie Mandel's father. Wayne Fiscus was the doctor's name. But he was so it was like a running joke. Anytime one of the parents showed up, it was always the Steve Allen's cast.
Who did St. Elsewhere, and are they still around? Because we should talk to them about this.
It's the producers' names are Brand and Falsey. Brand and I can't remember what Falsey's
or some of the writers.
Is.
We should talk to them about this because I missed all of that.
It was laced with all kinds of great inside jokes.
Like, I want to rewatch it.
It's like so many times I'd say to myself, that is so brilliant. And I don't know if anyone else is picking up on that. But yeah, they were the best. I've never seen a TV show do that as good as they did. It was just filled with them.
Kevin, let's work on who some of the writers for that show, because I would love to talk about that.
All right.
Can we take a quick comment here? Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. Mike. Thanks.
From that show with Archie, my favorite line was, Bill, is when he said, you know, Arch, I know, Mr. Davis, I know you couldn't help it being black and all that, but whatever made you decide to be a Jew?
Right.
That was my favorite line of the whole show.
The whole episode is just really so tightly written and so funny, and the fact that Sammy Davis Jr. would play it and, you know, be in it, it was just great, wasn't it?
And Sammy Davis's last line was, Archie, I'm sure you'll always be able to tell black and white.
Yeah.
And then and then looked at him, and it was just a great show.
So funny. Right, so. It really was.
Great Mike, show, you guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Mike.
Have a great week.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if that was made now.
Yeah, I don't know that it could, you know?
No, it's but those were the times. I hate to say that, but and they were making fun of Archie.
Right, right. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. All right. We must take a break, and then we'll talk to Bridget Carey from CNET in just a little bit. So stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's the first Tech Tuesday of summer. Actually, it isn't, because summer doesn't happen until 11:24 tonight.
Exactly.
So, all Bridget, right. Stay on hold for a little bit. We'll talk to you tonight at 11:24.
Next week.
Got it.
Next week will be our first Tech Tuesday of summer. How are you, Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor? And what do you want to talk to us about today?
It's been a busy news couple of days with Amazon stuff.
They're buying everything. They just bought our show.
Yeah, just before we got here today, they bought us.
We'll be at your house in 1 hour or less.
They bought Whole Foods last week, right?
Yes, they announced they're going to acquire Whole Foods. And, you know, really kind of grows their whole grocery ambitions. You know, they have that Amazon Fresh grocery delivery service. And now with Whole Foods, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions, but it makes a lot of sense. If you want some distribution centers, now you just got more than 400 stores across the world, actually. And not only that, they've been trying to get you to buy more into their Amazon Fresh service. They just launched the other week this little wand that you have in your home, and you scan items. Like, let me back up a bit. You keep it in your kitchen, and if you're out of milk, you would scan the barcode on the milk, and I would add it to your grocery cart, you know, in Amazon. So the next time you check out, all your groceries will just be delivered to you with Amazon Fresh. And the kicker was, hey, we're going to give it to you for free, Prime members, you know, but after 3 months, the service to get those groceries does cost money, so nothing is really free, right?
No.
The convenience of just having groceries that whenever you want. That's $15 a month. And then today...
That might be worth it for me, because there are times where we have nothing in our house except condiments right now, because we just haven't made it to the store.
Yeah.
So that $15 a month is worth my time, I think. That's for Prime members?
Yeah, and the wand also has Alexa voice assistant. So if you're really in a pinch, you could just talk to it and say, hey, Alexa, help me find a restaurant nearby, because you can't exactly get it right away, but you get it in a few hours.
Bridget, the speculation was, though, that if you ordered food with this new partnership, because Whole Foods tends to be a little on the pricey side, that their prices would go down because their distribution centers are so much better. Is this going to be the case, do you think?
Well, not. I mean, the whole reason things were pricey is because, you know, they're organic.
Right.
It's not, and the whole appeal to Amazon, right, is cheap. I mean, I can't help but wonder what is this going to do to the stock, not the stock price, I mean, but what they keep in stock at these stores, because Amazon doesn't have to buy distribution centers, if they could put some Coca-Cola in the back of Whole Foods, but people who, you know, care about Whole Foods not having those products and being all organic, they, you know, that would just defy their whole philosophy.
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know, I'm curious what they're going to do with that.
But don't you, with
plenty of places to play with their new technology. Have you heard about how Amazon tests out ways to check out without having to be in a checkout line? You know, they're testing out these little bodegas, these little sandwich shops and cafes, where you just use your phone and it can sense what you took off the shelf, and it knows when you're walking out this door to charge you. And so maybe this is a testing ground for their little experiments like that.
Be careful what you do in public, because Amazon is watching you. You thought, you know, Rockwell, that song, right. Somebody's watching you, it's Amazon.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that's a good idea. How do I get that Dash wand? Do I have to call them? And because I am a Prime member.
Well, it is online, although I hear now it's like on back order, so it might have been sold out.
Can Wendy just have the wand that she usually carries, the magic wand she usually has, updated, or is it a whole separate wand?
This one is magnetic, so you can put it on the fridge.
Oh, wow. Good.
All right.
I was going to say, too, Amazon also had a whole new thing today with their wardrobe. They're trying to push you to buy more clothing. They just launched something called Amazon Prime Wardrobe, where you can try on outfits, and they really just made it easy and no hassle if you want to change your mind and return it.
I have been doing something called Stitch Fix, and it's the same kind of thing. There's also a Trunk Club and things like this. And you plug in, like, kind of your styles, your sizes, and they send you 5 items. You can choose how often it comes. And the first few times, it was right on the money, 5 for $5. They styled things that are things that I liked. And then it got really bad, where they were sending me things that my grandmother would have worn, like house coats and stuff.
Oh, no.
So I canceled that. But it is really good when you get... Some of us don't have time to shop, so it's nice if you get things to try on in your own mirror with your own accessories. And then the returns are very easy with Prime Wardrobe as well, correct?
Yeah, they got a box already that you could just throw it in a pre-printed label, and apparently you just leave it on your doorstep to be picked up, so they pay for that service too. And, of course, they want to entice you to try on lots of things and keep them, because if you buy more than 5 things, you're going to get 20% off.
But, Bridget, if this is the case, because I think you get to keep the clothes for a week, right?
Yeah, you get 1 week, so can't dawdle.
So what's to prevent somebody from buying a very expensive dress or something, wearing it to an event, and just sending it back and saying, yeah, this isn't something I like?
I don't think you can return things that are worn. I know with Stitch Fix, the tags had to be affixed, and you only got 3 days to make up your mind. But if somebody,
you have to, you're going to go to that fancy gala with, like, a dork with some sort of tag still.
Like Minnie Pearl used to do.
Yeah. Kevin, I bet you $100 Kevin won't know who Minnie Pearl is.
I bet Bridget doesn't know who Minnie Pearl is either.
I smiled.
All right, that's fine. We're used to that.
You and our producer, Kevin, everything we say, it's like Grandma and Grandpa are talking once again. Let's push their rocker for them. Right. Minnie Pearl was on Hee Haw, and her shtick was she wore a price tag on her hat all the time.
And said howdy a lot.
Yeah, howdy.
Yep. These were simpler times, Bridget.
All right. Okay. But, well, so that's I really enjoyed Stitch Fix, but I'm done with it, so I need something different. I know, Bill, that you like to go out to stores. I do too, but not all the time can we figure out a time and a place to do it. So pretty soon the whole world will come to our house.
Yep.
I like it.
And a drone will take everything away.
That's how it'll be. I hope not Minnie Pearl. That's my hope.
And some Netflix news. Bill and I were just talking about this show, I'm Dying Up Here. It's a Showtime original about stand-up comedy in the 70s. It's awesome. And I know that some of the shows on Showtime, you don't have to be a subscriber, because some of them then ultimately go to Hulu or Netflix. Not sure about that. You can check your local listing. But what does Netflix have? Because I don't know why I have cable anymore. I watch Netflix and Hulu all the time.
I actually want to see that show you were talking about.
It's really funny.
Well, Netflix is doing something for kids. So they're not, you know, this is like those choose your own adventure style books, but in video form. They launched one today with the Puss in Boots character from the Shrek universe. It's called Puss in Book, and you know, you choose A or B, and there's like 13 different choices to make. And at the end, you know, it depends on how, you know, whatever path your character takes is the ending they have. And they're going to launch another one next month, another one in another year, so they're experimenting with this.
Is it Antonio Banderas doing the voice like in the movie?
You know, I don't know if they got him or someone that sounds like him, but either way, you know, kids are playing around with this thing. And although I would say these interactive stories, they're not going to work on every device you watch Netflix on. So it's not going to work on any Android device yet. It doesn't have an update for that. But it should work on some smart TVs and iPhones and iPads. And these Choose Your Own Adventure movies, they're actually starting to crop up more and more. There's one premiering next month in L.A. in a movie theater where the audience has 3 seconds to make a choice on what the character is going to do using their phone. And the filmmakers, now the movie lasts 90 minutes, but the filmmakers had to film 4 hours of content for all the possible different storylines. So, you know, it's an experiment in making a movie like a game. But
they've done this before. This, remember the movie Clue had 3 different endings? And then there was another movie company that you and I talked to a bunch of years ago where the audience would vote on, is it going to go that way or that way? So they've tried this technology before.
I bet it's more successful now.
I just think I think apps, you know, make it easier for you to watch at home and mess around with it. Yep. So they're going to see how this takes off. I don't think you're going to choose your own ending for Stranger Things or anything like
that. No, right. That's too much. Bridget, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, you too.
That's Bridget Carey from CNET. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Stay here. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And from Bryce Downey and Lankoff, we have Rich Lankoff. He is our show attorney if we ever should need one. Do we get a discount if we ever do?
You get one free.
It'll be me.
Get out of jail card.
That'll be for me.
Yes. Absolutely.
That would be smart money would be on you. Yes.
He also does Legal Face Off, which is an awesome podcast. And we have been dying to talk about this Bill Cosby mistrial. We waited to have you in the studio because we had a bunch of questions about it. All right. Where to begin other than Bill Cosby's case, they could not reach a unanimous verdict. The jurors could not. How many holdouts were there? Was there one person?
Well, there's been at least one that's been identified. There's only one that's spoken, and that person has said that he would vote to convict. So we don't know yet how many, what the count was, and that's obviously one of the most interesting components.
Will we know that?
Depends. They are free to talk, although today the parties are in court in Massachusetts on an order preventing them from speaking. So depending on what the judge does today, we'll determine whether they speak. And you can be assured that given the notoriety of the case, if the judge allows them to speak, we'll see them all over the media.
What determines the duration by which they just decide, well, they're never going to come to an agreement? You would think a major case like this, the judge would give it a little more time, but he didn't.
Yeah, the judge gave them 3 times. Now, there's no rule, but you know, usually after 3, they said they were hopelessly deadlocked was the words they used.
Yeah.
After 3, you know, it's up to the judge's discretion. He could have kept sending them back, but they deliberated for 52 hours, which is an extraordinarily long period of time. The judge at that point was convinced that they would not come to an agreement, so he decided to mistrial.
And do you want that holdout? Like, say I think I'm the only one who thinks he's guilty and I will not change my mind. I don't want to just have to go, all right, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, the jury system is based on the idea that one person can hold out, and if they don't feel that there is a conviction warranted, a mistrial is appropriate. It's unfortunate, but I think it shows some of the benefits of the jury system that, to your point, you can't just say, given the peer pressure of the others, well, I'm going to give in because people's lives are on the line.
Rich, help me with this. At some point, the jury asked the judge, they said, we need a clear description or definition of what molestation or rape exactly is. So what does that mean when they want to know that? Is it the fine-tuning of the wording? Is that what they're trying to figure out?
You know, there's so many different reasons why jurors ask questions, and in that case, when they're asking for a definition, it tends to indicate that, you know, they're not sure, obviously, what exactly the legal definition of assault or rape is. That tends to help the defense in those situations because, you know, if they were not asking those questions, it would seem more cut and dry and that they were leaning towards the prosecution. But when we heard, in the weeks or in the days leading up to Saturday that they were asking those questions, the feeling was that, those questions were lending themselves towards an acquittal or at least a mistrial.
Right.
Okay. So mistrial happens. I can't speak for Bill Cosby. I don't know what was going through his mind, but I know I automatically thought, well, he's going to walk on this. A mistrial doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be another one, but this judge does want there to be another trial.
Well, it's the state who came out and decided that, announced already that they're going to try it again. So it's really based on the prosecution who announced right after, almost immediately, that they would retry Cosby. They said they would do that within a year, which is pretty quick. You know, in the Phil Spector case, for example, the initial case resulted in a mistrial. 18 months later, they convicted him. So the DA, Kevin Steele, who ran on a platform of prosecuting Cosby, announced Saturday that they would retry him, which, you know, brings a whole host of other issues.
More money, more time, more jurors.
Exactly true. I mean, the expense of trying the case again is going to be borne by the taxpayers. And really, the second trial, in my opinion, will be to Cosby's advantage. Why? For obvious reasons. The state has already shown their cards.
Right.
They brought forth all of their evidence. Remember, the defense in this case only put on one witness,
yeah,
and that witness testified for 5 minutes. Then yeah, the defense rested. So now the defense has the advantage of having seen all of the state's case and evidence and not having had to show their cards. So in my opinion, prosecuting Cosby the second time will be a very uphill battle.
Really? Initially, I think I said this to you because we talked to you a couple of weeks ago about this case. I said, I think I have a feeling that if the jury comes back quickly, that's going to mean Bill Cosby's going to do some jail time. But the longer they deliberate, the more it's in the favor of Mr. Cosby. And you saw it that same way, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and I think that showed to be the case. You know, there's no science necessarily to how long a jury is out and what that means for the prosecution or defense. But I think to your point, and as we talked about, the longer they were deliberating, the more it seemed like they were going to find a reason to let Cosby walk or at least result in a mistrial. And in this case, that was the way things went.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for the woman who is coming forward with this. It just seems unfair that it didn't come to a resolution.
Yeah, she obviously went through a lot in coming forward, and she had her life exposed. It's often very difficult for victims of this kind of crime to come forward and have the prosecutors or you know, have the defense go after her the way they did in this case. Yeah, very unfortunate. Her attorney has come out, as has Gloria Allred, who's the attorney in the civil case for many yeah, of the women, and have said that we're going to remain strong. We're going to go forward. Again, the question of whether the retrial will be successful comes down to the degree to which the prosecution changes their strategy. You know, the big thing in this case, one of the big turning points in this case, was the judge not allowing the other accusers from testifying. As we
Except
talked about,
for one.
Only one testified.
Right.
There are, you know, 50 plus who can testify. That comes down to whether the judge in the next case will allow what's called prior bad act testimony. Basically, you cannot introduce prior bad act testimony as evidence of crime in a current case, but one exception in criminal cases is where the prior acts will show a pattern of behavior, an MO, and the prosecution has to convince the judge the next time that these accusers should be let in because Cosby's MO,
right,
his pattern is drugging women and having sexual or assaulting them sexually.
Right. Didn't the judge himself say upon completion of the case that this woman deserves a verdict? That after all she's been through, win, lose, or draw, I shouldn't say her draw, win or lose.
I didn't see that quote. Did he say that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, the you know, Cosby's attorneys came out very critical of the judge.
Yeah, right.
So did Camille Cosby, which, if I can just read the
sure,
statement that she issued once the declaration of a mistrial happened. Here is what Camille Cosby said. Someone else spoke this for her. She didn't say it, but this is her quote. How do I describe the district attorney? Heinously and exploitively ambitious. How do I describe the judge? Overtly arrogant and collaborating with the district attorney. How do I describe the counsels for the accusers? Totally unethical. How do I describe many but not all general media? Blatantly vicious entities that continually disseminated intentional omissions of truths for the primary purpose of greedily selling sensationalism at the expense of a human life. Is this a good statement for her to make when this is going to go to trial again?
I would certainly not counsel my client to speak that way.
Wow.
Of these people, especially the judge. You know, you don't want to speak ill will of the judge.
Because it's going to be the same judge for round two, right?
Well, not necessarily. One of the things that they, in my opinion, should do is move the trial to another venue. In this case, it was, I think, in a venue where it was impossible to get jurors who didn't hear of it. Not that you'll get any jurors who haven't heard of this case. But
you just can't have a preconceived notion of what the verdict would be. You can have knowledge of the case.
Right.
That's acceptable.
Exactly. The standard is whether you can put aside your preconceived notions of guilt or innocence and decide on the merits of the case. But, yeah, Wendy, I mean, those are, I think very poor choice of words. But, you know, we're in the era of Trump where attacking the media is an effective tool, and that's one of the things they did. But yeah, a little bit surprising that they came out that strongly against all the parties after this verdict, or after this mistrial, I should say.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Rich Lenkoff is here. If you'd like to join in, 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us there. It's Bill Leffenwin, Wendy Snyder on WGN. Rich Lenkoff is here. We're always baffled at why he comes in, but he's here, and we're discussing the law with him. I just want to quickly change something that I said earlier. I believed that it was the judge. I was under the belief that it was the judge who had said these words, but it was not. It was District Attorney Kevin Steele who said, and I quote, "She, the accuser, is entitled to a verdict in this case." He was very upset that a verdict wasn't reached, and he said that the accuser, after all she's been through, deserves a verdict.
Yeah, that's why I think I didn't hear it. But it wouldn't be surprising, by the way, to hear the judge say something like that, because, listen, you know, judges want verdicts. They don't want mistrials. They don't want to have to go through this again. So that's why the judge, you know, sent them back three separate times when they said that they were deadlocked.
Yep.
All right.
Play ball, Wendy.
Play ball.
That's my line.
All right.
There are so many things to talk about. You choose the one we're going to talk about. We have time to talk about one more case in the news.
Yeah, you know, this indictment on Friday of the teenager who was convicted of involuntary manslaughter for texting her boyfriend, who ultimately committed suicide. You know, that's a really interesting legal story. Because
refresh people who may not know the story.
Yeah, so this was a judge in Massachusetts who convicted Michelle Carter of being involved with her boyfriend, Conrad Roy, who basically encouraged him to commit suicide, the judge decided. This was basically a virtual relationship that they had.
They both had mental illnesses or issues, from my understanding.
Yeah, the person who committed suicide certainly had a history of threatening suicide. There was evidence of multiple texts over many months of them discussing suicide. She explained to him how to kill himself using carbon monoxide, exactly, you know, the generator to buy and a lot of details. He ultimately got into his pickup truck at a Kmart parking lot and asphyxiated himself. Now, he texted her right before he killed himself, right before, you know, the final act. And this is what really the judge centered on in finding that she was engaged in wanton and reckless behavior. She, instead of saying to him, "Get out of the truck," or instead of calling someone, or instead of calling 911, what she said was, "Get back in the truck." Those three words, "get back in," were what the judge centered on in finding that she was guilty of involuntary manslaughter. In addition, the fact that she texted a friend afterwards and admitted that she knew what she was doing, that's what the evidence that the judge used in saying that this was more than just a relationship, more than just free speech.
Is this unprecedented, Rich? I'm sure there's been other cases where somebody didn't physically harm the other person, but through coercion convinced them to do something.
Yeah, obviously the difference in this case is that they were not together physically. They were miles apart. This was done by phone.
She did text him at first, you know, "You need to get some help. You need to talk to someone." And I'm not defending her in any way, shape, or form, but she had been hearing about his suicide attempts, and she's like, "You really should go talk to somebody. Yeah. You really need some help." And he's like, "I don't know if that's going to work." And at some point, she's like, "Okay, fine, do it."
Exactly true. I mean, she was trying to help him initially. But
should have contacted his parents or legal authorities or something.
Yeah. Ultimately, what the judge found was that she displayed a consciousness of guilt, both by telling him to get back in the truck and by admitting to her friend afterwards. The words she used were, "I helped ease him into it and told him it was okay. I was talking to him on the phone when he did it. I could have easily stopped him or called the police, but I didn't."
See why she was charged.
Right.
Right.
I mean,
there.
The fact that she knew what she was doing and admitted to a friend about it. Now, this friend, you know, the testimony was a little bit questionable, but ultimately the judge was convinced that because she was aware of what she was doing, she did nothing to stop it, and she affirmatively knew that it was wrong and that her actions, or lack thereof, led to his death, that's what differentiated the facts in this case.
Is this the kind of case that sets a precedent, whereas you would think with social media being what it was, anyone now who's on Facebook and tells somebody, well, and kill yourself, couldn't they be held responsible if they
Yeah, that's the ultimate legal question. Does this establish a precedent? You know, you don't want a society where simply talking to people, especially about suicide, right? Because you do want to encourage people to talk to others Sure. who may be threatening suicide to speak about it. Are those people, is this now going to have a chilling effect on anyone who talks to someone else about suicide? The difference in this case, obviously, were those words she used, the consciousness of guilt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think in, you know, with social media being what it is, cyberbullying what it is, yeah. and the availability of technology, this can establish a precedent that you don't have to be physically with someone to encourage them to commit suicide and therefore be charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Would this have turned out differently, the verdict, had there not been texts to prove what she was saying? If it was just a, you know, phone conversation and then a witness says, well, she told him this.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that you had texts.
Be careful what you text people.
No question. I mean, they were very explicit texts. Obviously, they were submitted into evidence, so it was black and white. It wasn't testimony of one person against another, like in the Cosby case, right? That came down to largely a he said, she said. In this case, you have the black and white text as hard evidence that she knew what she was doing and didn't do anything to prevent it.
Isn't it interesting that depending on what the case is, sometimes texts can or cannot be used as evidence? It always depends on what exactly the case is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes privilege attaches to texts like any other communication. You know, we've seen in Illinois lots of examples of people trying to delete texts. In
right.
the Barbara Burbetta case, for example, texts and emails were
This Glinowitz case that's going on right now, they're trying to decide exactly the validity of the text between the husband and wife,
right.
and if they can be used as evidence.
Right. And, you know, generally, the standard is whether it's relevant, and the standard of relevance is pretty, you know, wide open. So usually texts are going to get in unless a privilege attaches. And, you know, despite people's attempts to delete them, they're always available, right?
Sure.
We all know that texts never go away, so a simple subpoena can reveal those texts.
You got to be careful. I mean, was it Yale that 10 kids who were accepted?
Harvard.
Harvard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was one of the Ivy League schools. And 10 people who were admitted to that campus put some terrible memes on this Facebook page, and they had their emissions pulled away from them.
Gone, yeah.
It's like, you got to be careful what's out there on social media and texts.
Yeah, I mean, I think the advantage of this case, whether you agree or disagree with the conviction, you know, we all could agree, I think, that you have to be careful with the words you use. You have to be careful with texting, and especially, you know, very conscious of bullying. I mean, this was really a cyberbullying case that went, you know, went wrong. So I think that's a good takeaway.
That's Rich Lankoff. Legal Face Off is his podcast. You can find that on WGN Plus. It's always a good listen. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Wendy.
We'll take a quick break. News and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
A little Johnny Cash for our meat
talk.
What's
wrong with that?
Play ball. All right. It is National Steakhouse Month. Did anybody know that?
Yeah. Happy National Steakhouse Month.
And we have Executive Chef Craig Cooper, Executive Chef at Michael Jordan Steakhouse, which is right down the street, 505 Michigan Avenue. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great today.
All right. First of all, we wanted to congratulate you and wish you a happy Steakhouse Month.
Mm-hmm.
It's June.
My favorite month of the year, Steakhouse Month.
Isn't it every month for you?
Well, every month is Steakhouse Month. I've kind of, like, in my niche in my career is I've become the steak guy.
Mm-hmm.
The steak guy.
And I can't think of a product that, like, deserves somebody to be an expert on it more than steak.
And that's what Michael Jordan's restaurant is known primarily for, is their fine steaks, correct?
So the steakhouse, yeah. We have worked and sourced out great vendors to find what we consider the best products out there that we can bring to the guest. And we have a variety of different steaks. Dry-aged steaks, wet-aged steaks, grass-fed steaks, grain-fed steaks.
Do they really all taste different?
Everything tastes
different.
They do,
don't they? Yeah.
Everything tastes different. Wet-aging will give some tenderness to the meat, and it'll have a minerality. Dry aging brings that same tenderness, but a depth of flavor that you can't get any other way.
Could you, if we were to blindfold you, Craig, could you blindfolded be able to tell which cut of meat you were eating?
I think that I could do a blindfolded steak challenge.
Wow.
I could tell you the cut. I could tell you whether it's dry aged or wet aged.
That's impressive.
That is really impressive. Talking about the cut, I am a ribeye girl. Mm-hmm. I know they always talk about the marbling, but to me, yeah, there's fat in there, but it makes it so juicy and flavorful. My husband doesn't like any kind of fat, so he's a New York strip steak guy. And there are people who will only eat filet mignon, which sometimes is dry and tastes like liver to me.
So the filet, it's going to be all about tenderness. And I personally think like a filet cooked mid-rare or rare, and you'll get some great beef flavor from it. Cooked higher, yeah, you lose some of that, and you might get some, you know, metallic flavor, that liver flavor.
It does taste a little livery, well, if not prepared correctly.
Mm-hmm. Actually, more even like the source of the beef. So that's making sure, you know, I find that the lower quality beef is going to have that organ taste, that liver taste. When it's cooked at a higher temperature, it becomes even more pronounced.
But people like that taste.
Well, that's, you know, you find people, they have their temperature.
Yeah.
They've already decided their temperature. Years of eating, cultural reasons, everything comes into how they eat their beef. And when they come into our restaurant, I'm not going to change their mind.
Sure.
But what do you recommend? What is the best way to enjoy a steak?
For a filet, I love it rare. Hard sear on the outside, and are rare on the inside. New York strips, maybe just cooked just slightly past rare.
Yeah.
And then for a ribeye, I like it just slightly past medium rare when
Does
I cook
it. Does it kill you? Sometimes you hear the story from restaurateurs who say, a guy will come in and say, I want this well done, and it kills you.
You know, it's the... Maybe in the younger part of my career, I'd be like, why are we wasting this steak? But then you realize... That's the way that person
makes
wants
them
it.
Happy. Yeah.
And I also like, you know, anything different is not going to make them happy. My thing is, if you want your well-done steak, I'm going to give you the best well-done steak that we can. You'll see menus that say we take no responsibility for steaks over.
I've seen
and
that.
And I think that's, you know, that's a cop-out.
That's a cop-out. Yeah.
You're not stepping up to the challenge of being in the hospitality industry.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to serve people to make them happy. And if there's blood in that steak and that person loves well-done steak, they're not going to be happy.
Yeah, that's true. Is that a better way to order it, though, on the rarer side? Because you could always send it back and say, could you put this on a little longer?
That is. But, you know, we strive. We have great people who work our broilers. The broiler is the special grill that we cook our steaks. Those cooks will cook some nights 400 steaks.
Wow.
And you might see a handful come up for a bump up on a temp.
Yeah.
Occasionally we'll have an overdone.
But it's a low percentage.
Very low percentage.
Yeah.
You know, they're able to lock in, and we have something, you know, we say when somebody orders it well done, they mean well done.
Yeah, right.
Send it to them well done.
Yeah.
But also don't char the steak. So we take steps and ways that we cook the steak so it doesn't get charred for the people.
Does it kill you when somebody puts ketchup on it? Does that make you upset?
Oh, my sister-in-law puts ketchup on her
ketchup?
Steak. So
At least day one.
I just look the other way.
Yeah.
All right. So I do know my way around a steak. I could never be a vegetarian. I love vegetables, but I couldn't just exclusively eat that. I didn't know the difference between a T-bone and a porterhouse, but I did know that they contained a couple of cuts all in one steak, correct? Would you like to tell us about that?
On the T-bone and the porterhouse, you're going to have filet on one side coming from the tenderloin and New York strip coming from the strip loin on the other side, bisected by a bone. By law, for it to be called a porterhouse, it has to have at least 1.5 inches in diameter of filet. Anything less, it becomes a T-bone.
Before cooking or after cooking?
Before cooking.
Before cooking.
Good question, Bill.
Thank you. I've been to restaurants.
We're talking to Executive Chef Craig Cooper from Michael Jordan's Steakhouse right down the street, 505 Michigan Avenue. June is National Steakhouse Month, and you've created a special menu for this month-long celebration?
So for National Steakhouse Month, we decided to do something special. We've seen in restaurants where they have a captain's list for wine.
Yeah.
That has some special wines. Maybe it's a special varietal or a special year for that wine, or something that there's not a large availability, and they have that special list that they'll give out to special guests.
Yeah.
We developed our captain's list of steaks. So we're able to source out with some of our great purveyors, some of their best, that maybe they don't have enough for us to put on the menu, but I could have available as a feature. One of them, there's a farm in Central Illinois, Slagle Farms, who we work really closely with, that we were able to get their huge tomahawk ribeyes that we were able to cut a steak for two. It's about a 42-ounce steak.
Wow.
That comes out for two. And, you know, they're a great family-run business that their beef really reflects the terroir or the soil of Central Illinois. It tastes different than, you know, other beef that we're going to get. It's a very, like, a great tasting, just very specific flavor that we get. They spent so much time raising their animals and perfecting their craft, so we're able to bring that to our guests.
And each steak is 42 ounces.
Yeah, we hand cut these giant
ribeyes. You don't have
ribeyes.
To split it.
That's
you know, we have some people who they take those on by themselves.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's a bone-in ribeye.
Yes.
A giant one.
With a giant tomahawk bone. So it's the longer bone.
See, is it bad for you to, once the steak is gone, chew on the bone like that? Because it's like a beef rib, kind of.
And make caveman noises.
I think that if you order that steak, you're entitled to,
whatever
to
you
chew on the... It's a big bone. It's like a Flintstone-looking bone.
I would be in heaven.
That's big.
We have to take a quick break. We'll find out what Chef Cooper has also included in the captain's menu for the month-long celebration of rare and desirable cuts. June is National Steakhouse Month. He's also brought along a $50 gift card, which we'll pass along to one of our listeners. If you want to find out more information, you can go to mjshchicago.com, Michael Jordan Steakhouse, Chicago.com. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. We are celebrating National Steakhouse Month. It is all of June, and make sure you stop by Michael Jordan Steakhouse, which is right down the street, 505
North Michigan. Can I tell you how authentic they are at Michael Jordan's? The staff there does their best work when they have the flu. That's how good they are.
Just no. Like MJ.
Yes, they do.
Executive Chef Craig Cooper in the studio with us. A couple of questions, and you have brought three different types of steaks. Would you like to explain what type they are?
So we brought one of our filet mignon, the most tender of all the steaks.
Sure.
We brought in a bone-in New York strip. It's dry aged. We call it a KC strip at the restaurant. And then we have a bone-in 23-ounce ribeye. That got some great marbling in it and just a tremendous amount of flavor in that steak.
There are a couple of texts. The difference between choice and prime, which is better?
So prime is going to be the best. But along with it, it's going to have a huge price tag. Most prime beef ends up at restaurants.
And who makes that determination as to how it's graded?
The USDA inspector is going to decide whether it's prime or choice, and it's all based on marbling. The more marbling, it's going to be called prime.
So does he look at it? Does he taste it?
They cut in between two of the ribs. Yeah. They look at the beef on the cow, and they make the determination on whether it's going to be prime, choice, select, moving down.
A question that I think we all have, someone has texted in, what do I ask for when I order a steak? I like my steak just past the juicy stage, but still pink in the middle. I just don't know what to say when ordering.
So this, I'm giving away a big secret.
Is this a trade
chefs
secret?
Across the city are going to kill me, but... Uh-oh. We're going to call that temperature. The server would come back and say, chef, she wants her steak medium plus.
Medium plus.
And if you were to say that at a steakhouse and say, you know what, I want my steak medium plus, they'll know what you're talking about. They'll give you a look and be like, who are you?
You must be on the inside.
So that's what, you know, there's people who say, I want it just past rare. And when they type it in, they'll say, we want that rare plus. So it's between medium rare and rare.
Yeah.
A lot of people will... that's how they like their steaks. Line cooks around the city grumble every time a ticket comes in.
Why?
Like that.
How come?
It's just makes their job harder.
Yeah.
You know, your cook he's paid to lock in on a temperature. He knows he can tell you rare, medium. It's just it becomes more of a judgment call.
Yeah. All right.
So medium plus is it's still pink.
It's just slightly cooked past medium, but it's not medium well yet.
Yeah.
So you're still going to have a large amount of pink, a little less juice, a little less blood, but you're not going to be medium well, where it's just going to be a trace of pink going through.
Can I do medium rare plus?
Exactly. Yeah, you could. And they're going to cook that, so it's going to have a red center, but it's going to be just slightly past medium rare. It's still have that red, but a little like closer to medium.
All right.
The same shade of red that the Bulls jerseys were?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Angus or Kobe beef, what's the difference? I know it's where they're from.
So it's where they're from. Kobe is going to be from the breed, the Wagyu cattle. And Kobe means it's been raised in Japan in the Kobe province. That beef is lauded for its marbling. It has a tremendous amount of marbling in the way they raise them, the genetics of the cow, and the feed that they give them. Angus means that it's black Angus or Angus beef. It's a British breed of beef, and that is what probably the majority of really top-end steaks in America right now are coming from Angus cows. You're looking for black Angus. It's kind of become a term that's been overused because they can call anything that's black an Angus cow, but true black Angus beef is really become the great American beef. It has nice marbling, mm-hmm. it's tender, and it has that juicy kind of beef punch that we look for on our steaks.
So basically, in a nutshell, what I'm learning from this is marbleization equals flavor.
Marbleization will equal tenderness. The fat carries the flavor of the beef, but you'll find that an American grain-fed steak will have more beef flavor than the highly marbled Japanese steak. But the Japanese steak is going to be so much more tender. The real Kobe or Wagyu just melts in your mouth. It's a very singular eating experience, and a little bit, and you're like, wow, that's an amazing, it's different than anything I've ever had.
When preparing these steaks, you would think that all sorts of spices are going into this, but it's not the case at all. It's salt and pepper,
really,
and that's it?
Over time, farmers and ranchers, they put so much time and effort in the genetics of the cow, yeah. what they feed them, how they raise them, to making sure that you get the best product. And I've noticed over time, simplicity wins out.
Yeah.
Kosher salt, fresh cracked pepper.
And that's it.
That's it. We finish our steaks with a secret weapon at the steakhouse. We render off some of the dry-aged beef fat from our dry-aged steaks.
Yeah.
We whip that with some brown butter and a tiny bit of Worcestershire glaze, mm-hmm. and then we brush that on right before they go under the broiler to finish. And that just little bit, it adds to the beef mm-hmm. flavor of what we have.
Executive Chef Craig Cooper in the studio. He's the executive chef at Michael Jordan's Steakhouse. June is National Steakhouse Month. We'd like you to check out Michael Jordan's Steakhouse. So he has brought us a $50 gift card. And let's do it number 23, shall we?
Perfect. Yes.
Caller number 23, 312-981-7200. $50 gift card courtesy of Executive Chef Craig Cooper. Go to Michael Jordan's. You can go to MJSHChicago.com. Before we let you go, you had mentioned, was it the Kobe that's really tender?
Mm-hmm.
Tender steaks are good, but sometimes I'm really in the mood for a skirt steak, which is really chewy. There's nothing wrong with a skirt steak, right?
No, love skirt steak. I love hanger steak. Filet, ribeye, and strip steak, they're kind of the king of the steakhouse. But you have those different cuts that are becoming more and more popular. Mm-hmm. There's more demand for them. But skirt, hanger, great, great flavor. You get like just a deep flavor because of where those cuts are on the animal. But the only problem is they're becoming more and more popular every year, and the demand for them goes up and the price for them goes
sure.
up.
Sometimes you find some steaks on sale at your grocer, and it's like a chuck steak, and they're kind of cheap and they're really good. What kind of meat is that?
You know, so that's going to come as we moved. Butchers have really looked to finding cuts that they can take out of different, like the chuck, the round, different things that they can take out of there that can be, you know, grilled and still have like a tender. You know, you're never going to be like a filet. You're never going to be like a ribeye. But you can get some really great tasting meat from different parts of the cow.
Those cows, they're so cute, but boy, are they tasty. I got to tell you this.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we thank you so much for coming by, Chef Craig Cooper. People can go visit you at Michael Jordan's Steakhouse, 505 North Michigan Avenue, right down the street. They have a good Manhattan at the bar there, too. I would like to recommend that.
Wendy's a huge fan of that Manhattan.
We mm-hmm. have great bartenders who
yeah.
make great drinks.
Everything's good. Kevin, we have a winner, don't we? William? Was he
William from Hebron, Indiana.
He wins.
He's going to make the trek into downtown Chicago and have a steak in honor of National Steakhouse Month. Go enjoy a steak at Michael Jordan's Steakhouse sometime in June or beyond. Who cares?
Greg, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Great to see you. We'll take a quick break, find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.